Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Monday, March 23rd, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the, well, many, many, many steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, job losses mount as Democrats fight for a relief bill. Vote is taking place right now. McConnell wants a corporate giveaway. We'll see where we land. Meanwhile, Alex Salmon, staff writer at the American Progress, will join us to talk about nationaling the airlines. Might apply to some other industries too, frankly. Meanwhile, medical supply shortages hit across the country as Trump refuses to enlist the Defense Production Act. Nation's governors are outraged by the failures of the federal government. However, the White House is getting into gear, folks. They are mobilizing agencies across the government to blame China. U.S. Intel reports in January and February are blinking red. Trump ignored. Meanwhile, the Department of Justice wants to be able to suspend the Constitution in court and criminal proceedings. Rand Paul has it, as do 350,000 others now diagnosed as having coronavirus in this country. Joe Biden did a video, and 38 positive tests in Rikers and other jails in New York. These folks need to be released. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. We've got some of our tech stuff, I think, you know, at least worked out for today. We have a different system that we're using. Brendan and Matt are with us. And hopefully within a couple of days, we'll have bring in Jamie and Michael will join us. And it's all fun. And I'm a monitor too or too shy of where I need to be, but we're getting there and we figured it out, I think. Hopefully people are hearing this. And we should also say many of you like to listen to it audio only live. And through the app at majorityapp.com, we are in the process of working that out as well. Kyle is going to set something up for us. I think that it's going to be awesome for us. That's going to happen. You can always listen or watch on the app at majorityapp.com. It's a free app. And if we're not streaming live audio, you can just click on the YouTube and it will take you right to the to the thing. Brendan, you telling me I need to have more audio? No? Okay. Just a reminder, this program, like a lot of the programs you see, rely on its members for support. We got a couple ads and we'll get to them, you know, and I don't know how much longer a lot of these ads are going to be with us. And obviously there's a lot of members who are going through some financial stress right now. I mean, the vast majority of the country, we're getting close to rent time, various bills, and hopefully something will come out of the vote today. And we will see where we are. We'll talk more about that as the show progresses. If you are one of those people who your job is not in jeopardy and you have the ability to support the show, be much appreciated. Join the majorityreport.com. also, you know, send some videos around to people. Those views, we're still getting some advertising from YouTube. I suspect that's going to go down, but I don't think it's going to go away totally. And check out the AM Quickie. Listen to that every morning. And we'll talk about the other shows too. Don't forget, you know, Matt's got a show, Literary Hangover and the Intifada, TMBS. Check out the Noma Key show. All these shows need your support at this time. Everybody's going through the same thing. But with that said, too, I've got some plugs and notices today. Oh, who's got music? Do you got music? I forgot to put in some music. Hold on for one second. Let's see if I can do that. That was the one thing we didn't think of.
I can play the music too.
Oh, can you? All right. Well, this is it okay music?
The one that we played last time, right?
Yeah, let's play some of that music for this episode of March 23rd. All right. Well, people imagine music behind this. For this version of Plugs and Notices, Monday, March 23rd, it's coming from a buddy of Brendan's. For more than 30 years, the Doe Fund has helped break the devastating cycles of unemployment, homelessness, and incarceration. They are launching a new pilot program, Good Food Works, producing fresh grab-and-go salads for sale at affordable prices throughout New York City, providing jobs to men transitioning back into the workforce. You can help their crowdfunding campaign at ioby.org/project/good-food-works. We will put the link below this video or in the podcast description, as we will for all the links. Maggie writes, this is a plug for my tutoring business, the Buff Tutor Network. Most of our tutors are grad students, adjuncts, teachers, and full-time tutors in STEM fields. This is a good time to get tutors if you can afford to. Obviously, kids having a tough, you know, school from remote. We're starting that around here. It's a madhouse. Buff, B-U-F-F, tutor, TUTOR.com. And Maggie also wants to say happy birthday to her mom with an improvised shofar. We don't have the shofar set up yet, so I'll just... There you go. There's also Isabel writes in to say, you mentioned some emergency funds on Friday, dancers, musicians, and actors. If you could mention two more, Authors League Fund, Dramatists Guild Foundation. Authors League Fund, Dramatists Guild Foundation. And Hunter writes in, I'm a member of a small DSA chapter in Chico, California, working on a program to help support at-risk communities in Butte County, California. We have a GoFundMe. That is at GoFundMe.com/F/Butte County Pandemic Mutual Aid. We will put a link, obviously, to that. There's some, you can read about it in the Chicoer.com volunteers organizations preventing isolated people from going hungry, members of the DSA. We will put into the description three coronavirus research resources links. One is to the coronavirus resource kit. It's a collectivized document that will be updated as more mutual aid projects and resources appear online. The COVID-19 mutual aid and advocacy resources. It's an edible document tree. It's a resource for people looking out for themselves and their communities through personal preparation, collective care, mutual aid advocacy, and the database of localized resources during coronavirus break. We will put links to all of that in the descriptions. And lastly, Brian, who's out of the city, writes about his best friends, Matt and Leslie. They're in Brooklyn. They have two restaurants that are struggling called Stocked Brooklyn, the Stocked Cafe. You can check it out at stockedbrooklyn.com, 635 Vanderbilt and 635 Washington. They are delivering, I believe, or they're doing takeout. So check that out, stockedbrooklyn.com. And that is our plugs and notices for today. I tend to be now a day behind on the plugs and notices because we're getting in so many. But you can email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put in the subject line plugs and notices, and we will get to them. And eventually we'll get a separate email address for that. We're gearing up, folks. I guess also if we need new hires, their easy way to do it, ZipRecruiter. You can try ZipRecruiter for free today at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. I'm looking right now as I look in my little window there. I'm looking at one of ZipRecruiter's top hires. I should say, well, not he wasn't hired by ZipRecruiter. It was our ZipRecruiter's top hires. Of course, is Brendan. So I know this. I have personal experience with ZipRecruiter. It sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, and they don't stop there. They have a powerful matching technology. ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job. And then they actively invite them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. Brendan, how did they invite you to apply?
Well, they sent me email blasts at an almost cruel rate. No, at a cool rate, I should say. And I came across this one and it asked, you had the most in-depth application questions, I would say. Mm. Kind of fun ones, too.
Well, thank you. Still, look
and,
at that.
Yeah.
Look like and someone's it now out. Bucking for a race. Look, ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to listeners. My listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. MAJORITY. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Folks. A lot of folks at home right now, you're looking around your house and you're thinking, man, we may need another couch. Well, Joyboard can bring your mood boards to life with hundreds of customizable pieces and over 50 fabric and leather options, 3 shades of wood, over 250 unique silhouettes from Joyboard. Fabric swatch kits allow you to see and touch all their fabrics and find the perfect choice. They even offer a range of kid and pet friendly upholstery options. I have a feeling by the end of this, we're going to need a lot of new couches with kids and pets. The kids are destroying this house. Joybird's protection plan helps keep the pieces looking brand new. Feel overwhelmed? A free personal design consultant can help you go from inspiration to creation. They also have financing options. And your rates could be as low as 0% APR for 18 months. They have a 365-day home trial. So you can bring the showroom home. You can even get free returns within 2 weeks of delivery. Create furniture that matches your own fearless style at joybird.com/majority25. See how Joybird can help make your dream space a reality today at joybird.com/majority25. Go to joybird.com/majority25. Receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order using the code majority25. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're going to go quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Alex Salmon, staff writer at American Prospect, on the prospect of nationalizing the airlines. We'll be right back after this. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Alex Salmon. He is a staff writer at the American Prospect. He wrote a piece, I guess 4 or 5 days ago now, which feels like a lifetime, in the American Prospect. It's time to nationalize the airlines. I assume it's still time to nationalize the airlines. Right, Alex?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. And as long as this bailout proposal kind of seems stuck in neutral, I think the recommendation remains very topical.
What is, give me a sense of like, and I don't know what the latest is, but I guess the vote is still happening in terms of the bailout, but what's the latest? Are you aware what the latest is on that? I mean, before we get into to this.
The last thing that I've heard was that the bailout proposal as conceived of by the GOP was basically a $50 billion proposal, largely no strings attached. So with few mandates in terms of hiring, in terms of executive compensation, in terms of stock buybacks or anything like that. So it's more or less the kind of same $50 billion kind of free for all that we heard about last week, at least last I heard.
And what are the Democrats pushing for?
Well, we're not exactly, I don't think there's exactly one particular vision that we've seen from them yet, but there have been certain members who've kind of pushed to say, well, if we're going to give them a $50 billion check, they have to, these companies are going to need to put an end to stock buybacks. They're going to have to limit executive compensation. They're going to have to pay all their employees a decent $15 minimum wage. And kind of putting conditions on that bailout money that I think is a little more reasonable, at least compared to the kind of GOP vision. But again, I'm not sure what the final proposal looks like, and I think it's probably still very much under construction.
All right. Well, let's go into your piece, and we'll lay the groundwork as to why people not only think that it's appropriate for the government to put very onerous or I should say very specific obligations upon these airlines to receive a bailout, but that the ones that we've been talking about are just simply not sufficient. You write, and this is just sort of amazing. And it gives it gives a perfect tone for what's been going on with them. In 2017, American Airlines CEO Doug Parker said, quote, "I don't think we're ever going to lose money again." And, you know, this is I have to say that, like, I know that I've read this peripherally and I've been aware of like how much airlines have been making. But you would think, based upon what they charge you for in terms of just like, do you want a bag of peanuts? That's $5. Do you want to bring a bag on? That's going to be $30. We're going to get rid of like, you know, the ability for you to actually like have legs on these flights. You would think that they were really hurting financially, but that's not the case at all, is it?
Oh yeah, absolutely not. It's been a great decade for the airlines, more or less. And they, these very innovative procedures like, you know, baggage fees and rocketing up change fees and getting rid of seat back entertainment, getting rid of meals. These things have basically, they've conjured money out of thin air with these things by taking these basic services and making them incredibly expensive. And that's been extremely profitable. I mean, they've literally conjured billions of dollars a year out of thin air just on baggage fees alone. So, it's an industry that's incredibly monopolized. There are basically four airlines that control over 80% of domestic passenger traffic, and they figured out that they can charge you for every part of the experience, getting on the plane and bringing your legs with you, and it's been great for them. It's been a wildly profitable run for them.
I mean, I just can't get over these numbers: $5 billion in baggage fees in 2018, $5 billion in baggage fees. That's nuts.
Yeah, it's pretty astounding. It's pretty astounding. And there's a reason people hate domestic air travel. You know, there's a reason people hate the airlines, and it's for reasons like that. And it's an astonishing amount of money. And obviously it went right back to shareholders and executive compensation.
Well, let's go into that. But before we do, let's just go back to where we were. Prior to, I mean, there's really two things that are relevant here: is Carter's deregulation of the airline industry, and Ronald Reagan's deregulation, if you will, of the, or I guess the, basically getting rid of the law that basically says you, a company can't manipulate its own stock is really what we're talking about. I mean, it used to be illegal to have buybacks as of like 1980. But let's go back before we get into, you know, what the executives have been doing with their profits. Let's go back to the era of deregulation. Tell us what it was. What was going on with airlines prior to Jimmy Carter?
So, for the first 40 years of domestic air travel, basically between 1937 and 1978, air travel was treated basically as a public utility, which it was overseen by the Civil Aeronautics Board, which was the CAB, and they managed domestic flights. They established, you know, schedules and fares and routes, and they kind of had this mandate to try to keep prices low to make, you know, domestic air travel available to people. But they also were, you know, operating in this understanding that air travel was going to be, was basically a public good and needed to be managed as one. So you had this period for 40 years where air travel was no different than Amtrak or any other sort of public utility. And air travel later was expensive, and there were certain things that you know, people were unhappy about. But also, this is kind of very much, you know, the airline industry in a lot of ways is kind of a bellwether for where the economy went at this point in time. So in 1978, Jimmy Carter signs this massive deregulation proposal, which basically hands over management of air travel to private companies in the name of innovation, in the name of, you know, lowering prices, increasing accessibility, and such like that. So we see kind of a sea change in the notion of how air travel is going to exist in this country, and it goes from being this utility, public utility, to being managed by what was once hundreds of private companies, but is now, of course, just four. So we kind of see a big turning point there, in 78, and that was kind of what set the groundwork for where we are now.
And in terms of like prices, the data showed that the prices were falling at a faster rate prior to deregulation than afterwards.
Yeah, that's correct. So yeah, there's kind of this conventional wisdom about privatization and deregulation in general, which is that, you know, it's the fastest way to bring down prices. It's pro-consumer, it's pro-innovation, whatever. From the very get-go, in terms of the privatization of air travel in the United States, it was pretty clear that was not the case. This was kind of not such an acute disaster as we see today, but it was clear that it was failing on these very basic levels pretty much from the outset. So air travel during the 10 years prior to the deregulation bill, as you said, was the prices were decreasing faster in that decade than the immediate decade after deregulation. So from 78 to 88, prices went down, but they didn't go down nearly as quickly as the previous decade. And there are all these other economic metrics as well that showed that based on the economic conditions, the price of, you know, fuel and all these things, the prices were actually, you know, they were not going down as quickly, that we were losing massively in terms of productivity and cost to consumers and all these things. So from the very get-go, even on its own terms, the deregulation project was basically to the disinterest or to the disfavor of the American consumer, or, you know, the American flyer or whatever you like to call it.
So we're now in a situation where for years, at least the last decade or so, the airline industry has, we're doing so well that their CEO said, like, we could be in an era, like, history has ended for us. We're never going to be in a period where we're not going to make money. And so what they did with all of their profits, instead of like, hey, we should have some reserves, they went out and they bought back a ton of their stock. Talk about that. And, you know, I mean, that's been sort of a bailiwick of mine, the stock buybacks for a while. But talk about the implications of it. I mean, why would someone do this?
It's an excellent question. It's you know, it's an excellent question because it's, you know, it's proven in this moment to be bad for everyone. But just to give a sense of how egregious this management regime was. So in the past decade, the biggest U.S. airlines has spent 96% of free cash flow on buying back their own shares. You know, which is, it's an astounding number, 96%. And American Airlines, obviously, Doug Parker, whose quote we mentioned, the CEO of American, was really leading the charge on this. So between 2014 and 2020, American spent $15 billion buying back its own stock, which is actually more than its free cash flow. They actually borrowed money to help facilitate this. So they racked up, you know, an outstanding debt obligation of $30 billion, which is 5 times the market value of the company, just to aid in this stock buyback. So they basically set up this regime wherein every nickel they could get their hands on was sent back to stock, basically funneled back to stockholders to artificially inflate the stock price, which was great for Ben Parker and American Airlines management, because, you know, his executive compensation then went through the roof because shareholders were so happy about all the money that he was funneling back to them. So you have this incredible setup here where, you know, shareholders and the executives are salting it away at the expense of not only the workers and of passengers and customers, but of the whole operation. And now we have this, we're at this place where it's basically insolvent. You know, they're saying to us that by May, these companies are running bankrupt, and you want to know where all the money went? Well, there it is.
Right. I mean, that's basically, I mean, this is almost like, and we'll get to the loans part, but this is like a leveraged buyout, right? Where they basically are just extracting from the company all this money that obviously, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, they could not afford to lose. This is just a way of the CEO basically going in and making sure that he gets paid and then paying off all the people who could potentially say, hey, wait a second, why are you walking away with all this cash? And his response is, you are too. And let's not worry about it. And that's basically what's going on here. And they also, on top of this, they borrowed $30 billion of money, presumably to do like the stuff that they're supposed to be doing as an airline, right? Like repairing their planes or whatever it is. And which is 5 times their current market value as of a business. I mean, this is American Airlines. And then the idea is that we come in and backstop them for nothing, basically, right? Just like, thank you very much. Enjoy this, and we'll see you again in 10 years.
that's pretty much it. It's. I mean, and they're, you know, what they'll say is that, well, this is, you know, this is a necessary industry, right? This is an essential industry. Provides an essential public service.
Thank you very much.
Without air travel.
Enjoy this, well, and we'll see you again
true.
In 10 years.
That may be true, but it seems as though we've entrusted this essential public industry to a private ownership scheme that is incapable of managing it, and as they very, very tidily showed here. So yeah, that's exactly it. It's not only you know the CEO or you know the C-suiters have done so well here. It's the shareholders have done great as well, and that's what I think is very interesting when we talk about these bailouts is that the shareholders are in some way, shape, or form going to be made whole here. You know, they'll get, you know, they're going to get some backstopping from the federal government. But I don't think there's any compelling case as to why that should be. I mean, they knowingly participated in this scheme just as much as Doug Parker or anybody else did, and they could have sold out at any time. But they were just as happy as the C-suiters to fatten their pockets on the stock buyback scheme and now, of course, we need it's back to the public purse to make things right.
And so let's talk about like what we could do here. I mean, I happen to agree that it is, airline travel is an essential, like it's like a public utility. But the thing is that with that designation comes certain responsibilities to the public. And so this isn't, it's not just a one way street. It doesn't mean that we just keep bailing you out. So talk about the idea of like, how exactly would we nationalize it? Like, what does it mean to nationalize the airline? Because on some level, right, there's the specifics are different, but the sort of the broad concept, it seems to me, it, you know, could function for a couple of different industries, right? Like internet comes to mind for me, for like, here's a great example of that. You know, the a private industry in terms of what they're doing for the internet, they will invest the bare minimum they can get away with because they don't need to have extra capacity because it just costs money. I think to a certain extent, we're starting to see that with hospitals on some level. But let's talk about the airline industry in terms of nationalization. Like what does that mean in practice?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, there are a lot of different ways that we could, that this sort of thing could happen. I think kind of in the general sense, what's important to point out is like you mentioned with the internet, is that a lot of these companies, a lot of these industries came out of publicly funded research, public investment, public management. So in a lot of these cases, we're just saying, well, maybe this privatization thing was a mistake, and let's just go back to the way it was before when we could count on this. And that I think has been true across a number of industries. And so at a very basic level, this framework is not some radical proposal. In a sense, it's just this one thing has failed. This one management scheme has failed. The only other one we know about that has worked would be nationalization or public management. But in terms of the specifics of how that would work, I think you could see a number of different proposals. The one that I've kind of seen most commonly was the idea that if there's going to be a bailout, the United States government should, the funds that it conveys to these companies should result in us holding 51% of shares. So if we became the majority shareholder, we would have some say in what the business is doing. That would help us obviously combat some of these more ridiculous stock buybacks, but it would also help kind of enact other, pro-consumer regulation. And you could get rid of the absurdity of the basic economy ticket. You could enact some real serious environmental regulations on this industry, which is has a horrible environmental track record. So that would be one way to do it, is just, the United States government could assume majority shareholder position with this bailout. And that would allow us to have some say in kind of the course of the company. That I think is actually maybe more generous even to shareholders than what would need to be, especially, given the economic circumstances we find ourselves in. They could even just say, where these companies are headed, they're going to be bankrupt. They're headed to zero. So we can just set the stock price at zero and say, we're going to take over the company, the stock is at zero. We're going to assume, operations and assume the outstanding debt obligations. And we're going to run this like Amtrak. We're going to run this like, kind of a basic public utility that we have to have. And that's another way to do that. And I'm sure there are, even more kind of sophisticated and advanced ways of thinking about this than kind of the simple measures that I'm throwing out here. But there are a number of ways that we can do this that are, straightforward. They have precedent, and it would be not only good for the American consumer, they'd be good for the environment, they'd be good for the economy, and they may ultimately be necessary to even save these companies from the chopping block in 6 to 8 weeks.
Is there anybody in our government that is amenable to these to taking this tact? I mean, is there anybody who's actually inserting it into the conversation?
I haven't seen it yet. Like we mentioned earlier, we've kind of seen these growing calls to put some serious terms and conditions on the companies. They are receive bailout money, and that, to be fair, is better than what we were at in 2008. Like if you compare compare the auto bailout to what we're talking about now, we have politicians, mostly Democrats, but even Josh Hawley, who I don't know if we can take him at his word. But was saying that, if they're going to take public money, they need to, promise they're not going to, commit to not firing a single person. They need to limit executive compensation. They need to, increase wages, whatever it is. That's obviously more of a Democratic proposal. But these sort of stipulations that we're seeing are actually a vast improvement over what we saw in 2008 with the auto bailout, or 2009, which was, then the federal government mandated that these companies cut wages as they, right. They offload their pension requirements. So, there has been a change a little bit in the way we're thinking about this. This is, a decade later, our line of thinking about public bailouts has shifted in a positive way. We'll see what the actual package looks like. Who knows? Has anyone said, let's just take this back over? Clearly, we can't trust this corporate management team with our essential industries. I haven't heard that, and I'd be happy to hear it. It hasn't found a mainstream advocate yet, at least in the government at this point. But we'll see. I'm not necessarily holding out hope, but we are kind of moving in the right direction a little bit, at least in terms of what we think about these packages, at least over a 10-year period. So maybe eventually.
Have we heard anything from Sanders or Warren, who it seems to me would be, I don't know that Warren would be in favor of nationalization, but maybe she would, but it seems like Sanders might.
Yeah, both of them Warren put forward a list of demands and conditions that any airline bailout on her vote would have to have. There were no calls to nationalization in there. There were some good proposals in there. Some good pro worker proposals. And Sanders kind of has done the same thing actually. The bulk of his commentary on this has been, $15 minimum wage, no stock buybacks, no outsourcing, expanding benefits, and workers sitting on corporate boards. That's obviously something that isn't part of his presidential campaign as well. But, that's another thing that at least, that's something we would not have seen, in 2008 or 2009, the last time we went through this whole song and dance. So, there's no vocal proponent of nationalization, but we are seeing through Sanders and Warren that there is enthusiasm about kind of reconstituting the management structure at least a little bit for these airlines if they are going to walk away with a $50 billion check.
The piece, Alex, is in the American Prospect. It's time to nationalize the airlines. I happen to agree with you. I appreciate your laying it out there. I think this is something that, this is a good time for folks to sort of, view these ideas, because this is, there's the reason why it seems to me the fight's going on with this bailout package is I think that it's not just a question of the corporations getting, their goodies. It's really the strings that they're arguing about. I think there is a real fear amongst the Republicans that structural changes can be made at this point that, Josh Hawley, even if I was to take him at his word, a lot of what he's talking about are stuff that like, okay, crisis over, let's revert type of situation. But if you nationalize the airlines, there is no reversion. This is a new way of doing things going forward. And that's the thing that I appreciate about it. Because frankly, why keep going through this every time?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's one of these things where we've learned this hard lesson again and again and again. And it does seem like maybe we can learn it for the last time here, and we can make these structural changes to prevent some of these more outlandish outcomes. We know what's wrong. We've identified the problem. We've identified the structure. We've identified the legislative circumstances that allowed it to exist. And if we're really serious about preventing ourselves from going another round on this hamster wheel, we know what to do. We have the tools to do it. So hopefully, hopefully someone will take up that mantle.
Alex Salmon, staff writer, American Prospect. It's time to nationalize airlines. We'll put a link to that at majority.fm. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
All right, folks. It's an important time. I don't think that Congress has even come remotely close to sort of absorbing what is going on in terms of the country right now. I think, and I don't know, this may seem like sort of nakedly partisan, but I think the fact is that, at the very least, it seems like the Democrats as a whole have at least come around to understand the severity of what we're dealing with from a health perspective. The Republicans don't even seem to be even remotely, remotely, I don't know, aware of how messed up things are right now. Maybe we can pull up that piece from the Daily Kos, but let's first listen to this. And I think, you know, they're going to come back. This bill is not going to be big enough, I don't think. You've got reports right now that we're talking about, you know, what was it? Who was it that came out with this? The Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, the president of that bank, James Bullard, predicted U.S. unemployment rate may hit 30% in the second quarter due to shutdowns. Second quarter being April, May, June. The Great Depression, and we measure it differently than we did then, and I think we measure it in a way that probably undercounts. The Great Depression, if I remember correctly, the unemployment rate was like 24.5 or 25%. This guy, James Bullard, you know, it's a guess. He anticipates a potential of 50% drop in the GDP. The definition of a depression includes a minimum of a drop of GDP of 10%. I don't think we've ever had a 50% drop in GDP. I don't think that's ever happened. And it would need to be sustained over time, but it's very difficult to sort of get out of this hole. And the government, I think we're going to try and talk to Stephanie Kelton later in this week, but the government's going to have to step up in a big, big way. And I think they're only beginning, they're only at the beginning of this journey in terms of realizing what the government's going to have to do. And I think that the Republicans, to a large extent, are, you know, worried that there's going to be too many strings that comes with this bailout money. But let's turn to, Brendan, are you okay to do this, that guy, which one? Oh, yeah, this Florida. Look, this is from Florida in the Okeechobee town meeting or whatever it is, right? And this is a guy named Bryant Culpepper. I knew a couple of Culpeppers back in Worcester. In Okeechobee, Florida, he is a Okeechobee County commissioner. And I'm not showing you this because I'm worried about Okeechobee, Florida. I am now worried about Okeechobee, Florida, but we should be worried about everywhere in the country. But I think this is indicative. I mean, I've been saying this now for a couple of weeks. Guys like Sean Hannity, all of those right-wing talkers, the president of the United States, I think they all are going to have blood on their hands by sort of denying this stuff and putting out just absolute garbage. This is, listen carefully to this exchange in this Okeechobee town hall where this commissioner is explaining what is a legit response to the coronavirus. Here it is. Hold on once. I'm not getting audio.
No. Okay.
Oh, bear with us, folks. I don't know what happens over the course that we tested my phone system. My phone system didn't work all of a sudden. Like Skype didn't pick up the thing, so we had to do a different one. We tested this. I guess maybe we could do like multiple tests.
Nasal passages.
Okay, here we go.
This might sound kind of silly, but being in the medical field that I was as a paramedic, it started to make a lot of sense. One of the things that was pointed out in this interview with one of the doctors, foremost doctors, that has studied the coronavirus.
Pause it for 1 second. All right, we jumped into this a little bit late. He is going over, you know, how to respond to the coronavirus. I think he's retelling about an interview he saw on One America Network. Is that the name of it? OWN. They bill themselves as the new Fox. Go ahead.
Says that the nasal passages and the nasal membranes are the coolest part of the body. That's why the virus tends to go there until it then becomes healthy enough to go into the lungs. This sounds really goofy, and it did to me too, but it works. Once the temperature reaches 136 degrees Fahrenheit, the virus falls apart and just disintegrates. Okay? And I said, well, how would you get the temperature up to 132 degrees? The answer was you use a blow dryer because it's capable of doing that. So you hold a blow dryer in front of your face and you inhale with your nose and it kills all the viruses in your nose.
Okay.
I would just caution residents to, you know, if there's lots of misinformation out there. We're hearing and learning a lot on social media, and there's just a lot of misinformation on how to cure this disease. And, you know, I personally would just leave that to your medical provider. I've heard so much, you know, just sad information about, you know, how to cure this virus. And it's a new virus. That's why they call it a novel coronavirus. And just caution on the, you know, mechanisms of, you know, trying to you know, treat this on your own and leave that up to the medical professionals to be able to do that for you.
Social media, I would not even have brought that up. This was on OAN, One American News Network, which is the fastest growing national network on cable. And it's the new Fox News, if you want to know the truth. And it was a doctor, and it did have his credentials that he has been one of the foremost doctors in studying, you know, how this is transmitted. And that's where that came from. And I agree with you. There's a lot of baloney out there on social media. You've got to be very careful. But I only brought it up because it came from a pretty reliable source.
I don't know how to respond to that, other than like we're watching like a rolling tragedy that has been, I mean, it's literally like just watching a slow motion video of an arsonist going and pouring gas on a fire. I mean, I there's so much that is disturbing. What I really appreciate too is like how he said like it works, as if he's tested it out. Apparently, you can burn your skin at like 110 degrees. So 136, first of all, you have literally singed your face. I don't know if a blow dryer can get that hot. I maybe can, but you would not put it up to your nose to get your flesh to 136 degrees.
Well, I've devised a contraption where I take a space heater and I put a ring around my neck and just hold it up near my nose. And I've been out in the city walking around. It's been real nice.
And where did you see this? I mean,
I built it.
It was on TV, and it was a doctor who had credentials. I mean, I'm telling you, and I've been saying this, you're going to be able to overlay the graph of on a per capita basis of deaths and the ratings for right wing news. I think, you know, we're already seeing it in terms of governors. There's that story. I think it was in, on the Daily Kos about comparing Kentucky versus Tennessee, and the responses there, in just in terms of the way that the two governors, you got Beshear in Kentucky who beat Bevin, and Bill Lee in Tennessee, a Republican, and it's absolutely stunning. Like you could scroll down to the graph here, you can see the difference in just like what they can you make that bigger? Let's see this. So you can see around here, right? Okay, that's good. You can see that the rate of growth gets exponential as time goes on. That's why the first couple of weeks are the most important weeks in this thing, and that's why we are screwed in this country. Because you can see, like in blue, the boxes are where the government and Beshear acts. On March 10th, you have almost, in fact, you have a little bit more cases in Kentucky. Well, one's Tennessee had 7, Kentucky had 8. There's executive orders to refill prescriptions for 30 days, closes prison visitation, restricts long-term care facilities. Meanwhile, in Tennessee, the governor states no need for schools or workplaces to close. And earlier, the governor strongly encourages social distancing, begins updates on the coronavirus. He talks about on March 11th, schools close within 72 hours. And March 12th, you have finally Tennessee declares a state of emergency. But everybody, you know, that's been going on for a long time. People don't do that. And it's not until the 13th that he even talks about hand washing. By the 14th, and he just says that to vulnerable populations. By the 14th, you have hospitals preparing to cease elective procedures in Kentucky. And already you're seeing the disparity. And then the growth just continues to the difference. Just by March 20th, there were 5 times as many cases in Tennessee than there were in Kentucky. And Kentucky had been, you know, more or less at parity, slightly testing a little bit more. So this makes all the difference in the world in that regard. There we go. All right, look, we got to take a quick break and head into the fun half. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Become a member if you are, and I don't think we've set it up quite yet, but if you are having financial difficulties, if you anticipate financial difficulties, you can either cancel and send an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com and ask us to hook you up, and we will. Or you can send an email and ask us to cancel at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Leave it open and we will refund you. But if it's, you know, we just need some time because obviously there's a lot of, it may take us a week to get there. In the meantime, we are also developing a mechanism in which you'll be able to do that by yourself. We have set that up. Okay. So folks, head over to, you can go to Fans and cancel your, if you're having financial difficulties. We've set up a feature now. I wasn't sure that we had rolled it out, but I guess we have. You can go to cancel at Fans, and it'll give you some options that will deal with you. If you have any issues, do that. Go cancel, and and you will be able to auto opt into a situation. So if you need to cancel, do so. If you don't need to cancel and you've been thinking about joining as a member, now would be a good time. You can do so at jointhemajorityreports.com. Also, sign up, get the AM quickie. And also, I just got 10 pounds of coffee today, showed up from justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. That's what I did. Head over there, get your coffee, load up on it. You're going to need it, folks. And don't forget, TMBS, when is tomorrow night, Matt? TMBS goes live via very much of this similar technology, emanating out of the same apartment in many respects.
The new Ground Zero.
Yeah, exactly. If somebody wants to take out all of Left Media, all they need to do is figure out where you live, Matt.
Oh, God.
Hashtag protect Lek.
Exactly. you can head over to the Michael Brooks Show on patreon.com. Also, the Noma Key show, she's putting out videos. You can find that at the Noma Key Show, youtube.com/the Noma Key Show and patreon.com, the Noma Key Show. Noma Key will be with us soon. We just got to, you know, we're coordinating all of this. We're rolling out one feature at a time, but we're going to get back full on. Also, don't forget, check out the Antifada, patreon.com, the Antifada. I think Jamie said that she had a new episode that she was gearing up for last week. So check that out. Probably released by now. And also Literary Hangover, Matt.
There'll be stuff on the Twitch and YouTube streams pretty soon. I think this week is finally it's going to happen. So look out.
It's going to happen. He's got a huge new computer there that I'm going to emulate. I'm going to have this whole thing wired, man. It'll be nuts around here. And if anybody knows why, for some reason, a Focusrite, what do you call those things? It converts an analog signal into digital. And now apparently a iVault. They work for some sound programs, but not for Skype. Like, what the frick? And it worked before. Check that out. Also, don't forget that AM Quickie, folks. Sign up for that. Thanks for your patience. As we get all this correct, we will get better and better as time goes on. We're going to head into the fun half. 646-257-3920. I am now, as I speak, making it possible for... Jamie also has a plug. Donate to the New York City's DSA Mutual Aid Grocery Fund. We will put a link to that in all of our stuff. We'll put that in there too. And see you in the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already. Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. Are you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.